We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
I just got home. It was traffic. Where are you guys? You got the office, David?
No, I am at home. All right, Caleb,
what's up? How are you? I know I asked you that, but
you know, I'm doing well. Coming off a busy day, busy Tuesday. I've managed to schedule all of my calls for the week for today, so that's fun.
Nice.
Oh, good.
Nice. Yeah, I know. She's been really hyper like since this morning, so I believe it. Well, for today's episode, we wanted to highlight our very own little princess, kidding, but Caleb, you know, your journey from launching your own business and, you know, building your own marketing conglomerate, on behalf of the crew here, David, myself, and Richard. You know, we just want to pick your brain a little bit and also just wanted you to share your journey and also just to highlight anything that you would like to share with other young entrepreneurs. And, you know, we can kick it off with that. But, you know, let's kick it off.
So my first question I have for you, Caitlin, because I want to start at the beginning, is tell us a little bit about your background. So what is your background and how did that background take you into the marketing world?
Yeah, of course. So I grew up in a small town in Texas. It's called Harker Heights, but the place that's more famous or infamous is Fort Hood, which is now known as Fort Cavazos. And that really impacted me because it was a military town. And so growing up, I was constantly surrounded by people from different backgrounds and ethnicities. And so I learned from a young age that our backgrounds really impact how we make decisions. And so I ultimately wanted to figure out, how do people make decisions and how do we make the decisions around things that we buy? And that led me into marketing. So I studied marketing at Texas State University. And then I did my MBA at LSU. And while I was studying, I actually started my business. And at the time, I was specializing in like website design. So I really liked the user interface, user experience side of things. And then I really wanted to get into the nitty gritty of human behavior. And so that led me into brand strategy. And that's ultimately what I do today. But I now do brand strategy in addition to business coaching. So I help people not only start their businesses, but now scale them.
Yeah. And, you know, for our listeners out there who don't have a quite understanding of what this is, tell them about what is brand strategy. Help them understand what that is.
Yeah. So I like to think of brand strategy as being the reason why you see certain things. So for example, like why is Coca-Cola red? Why does Target have the red Target symbol, even things behind the name, like why is the Redacted podcast called the Redacted podcast? You know, besides, oh, it sounds great. Like there's a deeper meaning behind everything. And ultimately that deeper meaning is as manipulative as it sounds, it's ultimately to get a sale. And so it's to connect with the customer. And so the Redacted podcast, you know, for example, I did help you guys come up with the name. You know, it has a deeper meaning behind it. And, you know, that deeper meaning is that we're going to showcase what the people are not talking about. And that really resonates with your audience because they want to hear what the people are not talking about.
Resonate is the name of your company, right?
Yes. Resonate Studio. I don't know if I mentioned that. Yes. Resonate Studio is the name of my company. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And full disclosure, Caitlin did create our logo and also help came up with the name, and yes, all around amazing. My question to you is, you know, you have an interest for human behavior. What exactly about human behavior, like, propelled you to, like, you know, pursue your own business in this realm?
Yeah, so it's really just goes back to how we make decisions, our thought process behind that. How do we go from not knowing about something to knowing about it to ultimately investing in it? And that applies to products. It applies to people. It applies to, like, a lot of things in our life, even, you know, major life decisions. Like, ultimately, how do we decide the life path that we go on? I find that all super interesting.
Can you dive a little deeper about the life path? You know, I know your backstory, but, you know, for our listeners, you know, whatever you want to share, because I think it is a remarkable story.
Yeah. So about my life path, I think, well, I can talk about my career journey. Is that
your career journey? Yes. Sorry. Yeah. I just got off from work.
Yeah. No worries. Yeah. So fresh out of college, I was working in an agency, and I actually intentionally did that. And I don't know that many marketers would choose to work in an agency. They usually try to go in-house and niche down as soon as possible. But it was actually important to me that I did not niche down because I wanted to have my hands in everything. And so I worked at a startup agency, and that was really fun because I got to work with a lot of different companies and slightly different industries. And from there, I then kind of pivoted and I went to in-house at a Fortune 100 executive recruiting firm. And that was a lot of fun because I went from almost like a startup, which could be seen as like the bottom of the pond, to like the top. Like, I got to see at a high level how these Fortune 100 companies operate, what their people are like, and how they kind of work. And it was so, so fascinating for me. And then ultimately, I did get laid off. I got caught up in the layoffs in the end of 2023, as a lot of people did. Mm-hmm. And that is actually when I went full time with my business. I really felt like I had seen in my short career. So mind you, this was all in the span of like 3 years. I really got to see almost like both sides of the coin. I got to see the startup side, and then I got to see the huge Fortune 100 company side. And I was like, I really do believe that I have enough knowledge that I can help people with their businesses and help them grow them to a significant point before they probably should go to somebody else who has a bit more experience. But I can provide significant value that way. And I don't want to ramble. I'm trying to go back to your initial question, like just how that changes your path. I think having my path be so zigzaggy and unconventional was really what gave me the experience that I needed to be the entrepreneur that I am today.
Awesome. So we do have a question from Richard. He unfortunately could not be here with us today because he is busy moving into his new beautiful home, but I will kick it off with his question. I'll kick it off with his question, and then David, off to you. But a question from Richard, what vision do you have for the business? For your business?
Yeah. So for my business, I would really like for it to be this A to Z shop, one-stop shop for people. So as of right now, I really do specialize with people that have side hustles. They are currently working 9 to 5 and they have side hustles that they're wanting to get off the ground and scale to being their only form of income. And that is what I do really well right now. I help them with the coaching, but I would love to also, you know, have a marketing agency that branches off of that, so that if they need help running ads, if they need help with the website design, you know, the copywriting, I can also help them with that. And then also if they need help with hiring and outsourcing and I would also love to help with that. So like, I would really love to really help scale people's companies from being this tiny little idea to something that you could probably even exit out of.
What do you think are some of the most common issues that people have trying to, you know, scale like a small idea that they have into a full-on business? And in what ways are you always trying to work with them to mitigate those issues?
Yeah, so the biggest issue that a lot of my clients have is that they know what they know and they don't know what they don't know. So they know, let's say someone is wanting to start a matcha powder tea brand. They know that they love matcha and they know what good matcha tastes like, but they don't know how to make that into a business. And so I'm teaching them the business acumen. I'm teaching them how to write a business plan. I'm teaching them how to run ads on it, how to get your customers, how to keep your customers. And so those are the biggest hurdles that we are having to overcome. It's how, even sometimes, how to be more professional to the point that you are pitching, trying to get buy-in from not only customers, but maybe investors. And so those are the biggest hurdles. It's really just building that business entrepreneur mindset when you're coming in just like as a lover of the service or of the solution that you know you have.
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people come in with an idea when they're starting a business, and I just going to use like a random business, like person opens up like a coffee shop, right? Because they make great coffee, right? People love their coffee. So they start to open up the shop, they open it up, put the sign up, and then they wonder, where are the customers at? Why is no one showing up? Right. You know, and obviously there's this sort of, you know, disconnect or lack of knowledge about how to do proper marketing and branding of, you know, in this case, use a sort of fictional idea of like a coffee shop to really start to try to get attention out there and bring people in. So when you're thinking about the kind of clients that you're working with, right, and those sort of things, how do you navigate them through that process? Because I know that's a tough process to get people to, you know, not just you can tell them information and give them knowledge, but to get them to really get involved and actually start to do that, you know, on a day-to-day basis. How do you navigate through that?
Yeah, of course. So as you said, putting up a sign outside the coffee shop doesn't mean you're going to get customers. In the same sense, putting up pictures and videos on social media is also not marketing, and it's not going to guarantee you customers. So what I like to do is I like to work backwards a little bit. So I like to understand my customers or my clients, their business, their service, whatever they offer. And then I also like to then go and understand their audience, because that's who we're selling to, your customers who we're selling to. And so if you are screaming at me, hey, we have matcha at this coffee shop, we have this super exclusive espresso, I don't know coffee, maybe it's like Colombian coffee or something like that, I don't know coffee, but you're promoting things that you think are cool, but your customer doesn't think is cool, or your ideal customer doesn't think is cool, then you're not going to get sales. And that's where the disconnect happens. And so it's that you have to go to your customer and you have to think and put yourself in their shoes and ask yourself, or ask them if you're able to, you know, do a questionnaire. What do you want to see? What do you want? What are you interested in? And then you take that information and you use their exact words in your marketing. So if they're like, you know, we're not really into like Colombian coffee, but maybe if you had South African coffee, I'd be more inclined to shop with you. That is what you have to do. You almost have to work backwards, because ultimately your product is for the customer. So let the customer tell you what they want.
Interesting. Wow. You know, and I want to ask this quickly, and then I'll turn it back over to you, Rich. One of the things I learned once was that if you were to go to like a corner, like, you know, your little corner bodega, as they'd say in New York, or your little corner store, you know, little individually owned store, and the people working behind there would say, like, if somebody came in and asked for a product that they didn't have at least five times, right? Mm-hmm. You know, five different people, right? That would pique their interest and say, maybe we should consider to start caring. And then once they got to 10 times and they say, okay, they're going to order a bit of that product to see how well it does, because then now they see that people are asking for that product, and that gives them, you know, a sort of good idea that that's something that they need to start, you know, caring, you know, within their business. So how does something like that tie into the work you do with clients? How do you help them discover, like, you know, the market that's out there that they didn't even know was out there?
Yeah, I've absolutely seen those signs in the convenience stores. And, you know, I wish more businesses did that, to be honest with you. Even if you are a service-based business where you don't have physical products to offer, asking for feedback every now and then is not a bad thing. If you want to continue to be relevant, I think you should be asking, what can I do to improve? What can I do to cater to the person that you are now versus maybe before you even had one of my products or before you even stopped in or who you were a few months ago. And so going back to your question, I'm sorry, what was your question?
Yeah. So my question was more so around like, you know, when you think about what I was putting out there, like, how do you, you know, how do you like with your own clients, like how are you getting your clients to find markets that they didn't even know existed, you know, for their own, whatever it is, their product or their service?
Oh, yes, I see. That they didn't know even existed. So mm-hmm. What I do with my clients is first I start with who they're working with now. So who are they currently selling their products to now? And I always ask them, is this your ideal customer? And sometimes it's a yes, and it's amazing, and we've just kind of lucked out, and I think we should continue speaking to that person. And then sometimes it's no, I actually want this type of client, or my person is kind of thinking along this line. So for example, a client that I met with earlier today, she has a specific type of customer, but she really wants to become more elusive, exclusive, and wants to reach a customer with a higher tax bracket. And so I was like, okay, so we need to go to asking the nitty gritty questions, like what kind of watches are they wearing when they're not at your property? Where else are they spending their time? Are they at a certain golf course? Are they eating at a certain mm-hmm. restaurant? Where else are they going? And that is how we find out more about that audience from data that they may not already be giving us.
I love that you say golf course. That's where I'm going to be heading.
I have my Callaway gloves on my desk right now.
So from what I'm hearing is that, you know, you're supporting various clients from different industries. But how do you balance creativity and data-driven decision-making and your marketing strategy?
Yeah. So what's really funny is a lot of my clients are so data-driven and mm-hmm. they need somebody who can come in and be that visionary. So a lot of times I am actually just balancing out my clients. So when they are more data-driven, then I kind of sit on the more creative side, or if they're more creative, then I really compliment them by being more data-driven. But as somebody who has always been able to kind of balance that left and that right side of the brain, a lot of these platforms really do have those built-in analytics. And so if you are able to use those are a great starting point. And then I have my own dashboards and, you know, things that I use that I help my clients use to keep track of. Are these ads actually converting? Is your landing page actually converting against whatever goals that we may set initially together? Mm.
And how do you approach content marketing, and what types of content have you found most effective?
Yeah, so for content marketing, well, any type of marketing that I do with my clients, it really does depend on your customers. So where is your customer base? Are they on LinkedIn, or are they on X? Are they on Instagram, or are they on Facebook? Wherever they are, that's where you should be. That's where you should be active and engaged and posting your content. So it's not like a blanket statement like, oh, TikTok is going to work for me, because it may not. Because if people are not buying from you on TikTok, if you're posting on TikTok for months and you're not getting a single customer, TikTok may not be the best platform for you. And so I always tell people that ROI is not always based on money. ROI, return on investment, is also your time. So if you're spending a lot of time creating content for a platform that is not getting you viewership, it's not getting you customers, you need to spend your time somewhere else.
Right. So you're telling me if I make these high quality content videos in the real estate industry, right, and I'm following all these trends, you're telling me it doesn't equate to money?
If it doesn't equate to money for you, it does not make sense for you. Never mind what your competitors are doing. Never mind that. If it is not like uh-huh. money, if it's not putting money in your pockets, you need to be doing something else.
No, that wasn't a shot to anybody, by the way. But
you know, something that this conversation is bringing up for me is, and you might have heard of this, Caitlin, but if you ever heard of the African-American or Black hair care product largely used by women called Shea Moisture, right? Mm-hmm. It's a product for natural hair. And the founder of it decided that he wanted to expand the market beyond just that of, you know, Afro-textured hair, and wanted to expand it to, you know, obviously people who may be white or, you know, Asian or whoever else who don't have the same kind of textured hair. Yeah. And essentially what he did in the process was to, number one, dilute the product, right? You know, that he had, and then started creating new advertising and all virtually eliminated, you know, his original core customer from that. And he got a negative response from that core customer base. Like, they were really, really, they used all the channels of social media to let him know, you know, they felt like that they were now being excluded from a product that was originally made exclusively for them, and that mistake. So, you know, when people are trying to scale and trying to expand their audience, you know, or trying to expand their customer base, if it's a product, you know, when you think about that, how do people avoid making this kind of mistake of alienating your core audience when trying to expand and bringing in a new customer?
Yeah, that's a hard line to dance on. That is a, and it, I've seen this throughout my career and even just like in my personal life. Shea Moisture was definitely one of those people. Another example that I love, love-hate relationship with is Victoria's Secret. They did the exact same thing. You know, they were really, Fenty came out on the scene and they were trying to be more inclusive about their lingerie and their models. And they ended up completely alienating the girls that were like size small in order to cater to a different body type. And when you're wanting to do that, you really do have to take into consideration that you have these two groups that you're now trying to speak to. And yes, when you grow and you're wanting to expand your reach, you do risk losing the people that liked the exclusivity of your brand. But I like to think of that only being about like max 20% of your audience that's really going to appreciate the exclusivity. Now, the rest of the audience that you were once catering to, which, you know, let's just say like that other 80%, they are just going to like the products. And as long as the product continues to work for them, they're not going to leave you. And so it's really just a matter of extending your product range. So Shea Moisture should not have diluted, in my opinion, Shea Moisture probably should not have diluted their product. They probably should have just made different products for different types of hair. That way they can still cater to African-American hair texture along with the other hair textures that they're wanting to now market to. So that way they can still have that 50-50 split without losing essentially 50% of their audience.
Yeah, and I think the best example of that being done was when the company that produces Pantene Pro-V, right, all those hair products, they found that there were a lot of Black women who used the product, those with more Afro-textured hair. What they did is they created a separate line called Relax and Natural, right? And did heavy advertising around that to say, here, we're just expanding. Here's another customer base. We have a separate product line made directly just for you. And the products that they had, you would think these are the kind of products. If you were to go to Black-owned hair care brands, they would have these products. And they did their research well, and they just created a separate line. I think that's always a good way of going it. So here's an interesting question for you. In your opinion, what is a major brand out there, a major company having products or services that you think is doing everything right and that people should just, not that they need to copy them because they may not even be in the same industry, but it's a good model for how things are done right, how you grow and scale a business correctly and how they're able to do the things they need to do in order to start bringing in revenue.
Only because it's top of mind, I would have to say Crumbl. Have you heard of Crumbl? Do you guys have in California?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Crumbl Cookie, where did they start? I don't even want to say a place. I want to say Utah, but I'm not 100% confident in that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it started as like these two, I think they were cousins, and they grew the brand from just kind of like this local coffee shop to this huge chain. And I really, and I mentioned them because they recently went through a rebrand and you wouldn't even know. Like it was so subtle, but it makes so much sense as to why they did it. And they started out making cookies and then they recently, like within the past year, within the past like few months, actually, they dropped the Crumbl Cookie. So now it's just Crumbl because they now serve cakes. And so you can buy cakes from them and you can buy brownies from them. And it was so subtle, but it was done so well because people love their cookies. So you're not losing the cookie market. But for anybody who did not maybe love their cookies, now you have a cake as an option, or now you have a brownie as an option. And of course, they have their whole mini cookies product now. And so I think that is a company that did it pretty well. I don't know a lot about their marketing, but what I do really like is I recently found that they're on a lot of platforms, even the platforms that you wouldn't even think of. They're like on YouTube, and that's so cool. And what I really like more than their marketing is actually just their entire business model. So a business model that I think would work for a lot of businesses is exclusivity or limited edition to create urgency. And that is something that we hear a lot, yep. But Crumbl does it so, so well. And they basically tell you that we have a set menu. You have about 5-6 cookies to choose from in total, but they're only going to be here for, I would say, 7 days, but I think they're closed on Sundays. And so either Sunday or Monday, they're closed 1 day of the week. And so you really only have 6 days to get this limited edition menu. And then we don't know when it's going to come back. So if you want this Olivia Rodrigo cookie, you have to get it within this week. And it's such an amazing business model. And I think it's what's created this craze around their products that keep even customers who have been customers for years coming back.
Yeah, you're making me think about the McRib, how they would, you know, bring that out like for just a limited time once a year, right?
Oh, I know. Whenever McDonald's needs some sales, you know, just throw the McRib on the menu.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not a fan of the McRib. No, but we gotta defer to a Richard Chang question here. You know, I know in your line of work, you do a lot of vetting, or potential clients do most of the vetting to you to see, you know, if you can deliver, you know, the specific skills, sets of services. But how do you avoid bad clients or bad customers?
Yeah, so I actually have a YouTube channel. It's just Caitlin Cole, but I have it mostly because I think it's important that people feel my energy, they feel my vibe before they work with me. And I'm not for everyone. I have only so much experience in my 25 years of life. So if you are running a 40-person business, I may not be the person for you. And I'll be completely honest about that. But also, you get to see that, like, if you don't want somebody who has like a more warm approach, but it's also sometimes a bit of tough love, then I may not be the person for you. But if you do like somebody who you can kind of joke around with and have a light business conversation with, and someone that is really going to educate you along the way and not just do everything for you, then I am the person for you. And so the way that I avoid bad clients is actually by putting my own content out there, showing my face, showing my personality, and being 100% authentic in myself. And clients that do not want to work with me don't even reach out to me. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but my clients, all of the clients that I've had, have been amazing to work with.
You generated your own outreach, well, your own form of outreach, and, you know, it's coming to fruition, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like my energy, my smile, it calls in my ideal client. So I never have to worry about somebody coming in cold. Like, a lot of my clients are like, oh, I saw your YouTube video and I knew I had to work with you, or I saw your website and I knew I had to work with you. And when you land on my website, it's me, it's my face. You go to my about page, it's not even a headshot. Like, it's me in a coffee shop drinking a coffee and eating a banana and chocolate chip banana bread. It is like, it's just being 100% myself and not trying to be anything else. And that is what brings me my clients and my ideal clients.
You know, I think that's a very good thing, that people can just jump to your YouTube and fill you out and get a sense of, you know, knowledge about you, and then make the decision about whether they want to go ahead and make that first contact, right?
Just 100%. And that's why I tell people, because I feel like I have no sales calls. And some people might call them sales calls, but I genuinely feel like I never have sales calls because people, just as much as, you know, my clients are, you know, probably vetting me, by the time they vet me, they have so much content that they already know walking into the quote unquote sales call that they want to work with me. And if they don't want to work with me, then we're not even hopping on a call. And so, you know, that saves both of us so much time as well.
Wow. So it's like you already have your portfolio out there. I'm sorry, David. You already have your portfolio out there, and just like, right. You know, it's already like that marketing brochure, right? And it's already there. It's free. It's digital.
Exactly. So by the time we're on a call, you already know that I can help you.
You know, one of the things that you said that I really like, and sometimes I think people find it hard to say this, but you know your limitations, right? You know, this is. Yes. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. And so, you know, like, this is when you need to push it up to bigger people. I'm not going to say any names because if they were to happen to listen to this podcast, they'd be on YouTube making some videos, husband and wife team, which you probably know what I'm talking about. You know, there's sometimes people where, for example, in the entertainment industry, there might be somebody who's good at helping you get to the comedy club. But now when you're trying to get into the film and television world, you need to bump that up to somebody else who actually has that experience. And it's really, you know, it's really refreshing to hear you just be honest and say, look, this is what I can do. This is my area, right? And then you can direct them into another direction if that's not the case. So I guess a question for you there is, why do you think so many people can't do that? Why do so many people try to take on more than they can actually do?
Great question.
To impress. I think it is to impress. And I believe that the only way that you can truly impress and go above and beyond, which you want to wow your client, everyone does, but trust is so much more important. Having that trust that I'm going to take care of your baby, because people literally think of their businesses as their babies. I'm going to take care of your baby and I'm going to get it to a toddler and I'm going to get it to kindergarten, but at kindergarten, it has to go to a different teacher. And that's fair. I mean, that's how the school system works. I mean, that is how everything works. When you are in your career, you have a certain job and then you move jobs and you go to a different manager. You move jobs and you go to a different manager. You have to go to somebody who's a bit more ready to teach you what you need to be taught to get you to that next level. And it really takes somebody with a lot of integrity to say, honestly, I can't help you with this. I can maybe help you find somebody who can help you with this, but I truly want the best for your business, and the best for your business is not going to be a logo made on Canva. It is not going to be, and no shade, but like a website made on Wix. It's not going to be having somebody who only has 6 years of business experience, of work experience, of career experience to take your business to the Fortune 100 company that you want it to be. So it really, you really have to let go of this need to impress and be real about what you can and cannot do. And that in turn will build trust with your clients that this person truly wants the best for me. And then that's how you get those referrals. So it's not that you're necessarily turning down business. I like to think of that trust as an investment. Like maybe they'll come back to me later with something I can do. Or maybe they'll, through word of mouth, refer me to somebody else who needs what I do offer.
So you mentioned something very interesting. When I was in college, what I've learned is word of mouth is like the best marketing tactic. Is that true, in your opinion?
Absolutely. There's safety in numbers. And so before we even had digital, digital, like just like posting.
Impressions,
Yeah, like even when you post, you're looking at how many followers does this person have? How many likes is this post getting? How many views does this have? What are people saying in the comments about this? What are the reviews saying? There are so many ways that we directly and indirectly do word of mouth that we don't even realize. And it doesn't have to be a Google review. It's just that having someone else who had the same problem as you once before and now has the solution and can vouch for the solution that you provide, that is what people are really banking on. And that is what is powerful. So getting those reviews, sadly, upping your follower count. Like if you only have 2 followers on your business for sunscreen, I may not trust your sunscreen, right? But if you have 2,000 followers for your sunscreen, okay. And then you go to your sunscreen and maybe I'm Black. You guys can't see me. I'm African-American. but if you only have, you know, white women on your sunscreen page, I need some word of mouth content from a Black woman. And that is why even UGC, user-generated content, that seems much more authentic and seems like it's created by people that have used your product in the past, is so, so popular and also so important, because it just really emphasizes that safety in numbers and it feels like word of mouth.
Yeah. You make me think about when it comes to the user generated content, you make me think about 2 things. I want to run this by you. One is, you know, the whole phenomena of people wanting to buy follows and likes, right? Or those are putting up fake things. Like there's a certain major company that, you know, they're part of their advertising is that you're shopping like a millionaire, but them comments seem like, they don't seem like real comments from real people, right? You know what I'm talking about. You know, they don't see that there. You know, so people doing that sort of buying likes and follows and those sort of other things. And then others is when you have like some of the beauty bloggers and people who, it's like, if every other day you're reviewing a product, right? You can't have used that product and really determine whether or not you like it or not. So, you know, I sometimes question, with either of these things, is this really good for the business, you know, to be able to reach out to somebody who just reviews people's products? And if you pay them money, they'll probably give you a decent review without us really knowing whether or not you can trust in that person, because you're probably not using 78 different products in a year that you're reviewing, right? You're probably not only using some. So what are your thoughts on that?
It's also, I'll throw another example in there. It's like when people use AI, ChatGPT to write their blogs, to write their captions, to write their LinkedIn posts. We can tell. You think you're getting away with it, but we know that your followers are bought. We know that your Google reviews are fake. And it's not always conscious. It's always like sometimes some subconscious where we're like, this doesn't really feel authentic. Something about this brand feels empty. Something about this customer engagement feels empty. And if your customer has any inkling that your brand is empty and that there is no heart behind it, no spirit behind it, they will not buy.
A lot of great tips. I have a few more questions and then pass it on to you, David. But you know, I'm sorry, Caitlin. I feel like this has been like a big job interview, but we are like genuinely we genuinely like want to know, because, you know, like, how do you do it? And just learning how you operate and conduct your business is nothing but short of amazing. So, but I really do want to know, like, how do you handle like negative feedback, you know, in your marketing campaigns or in your line of work? And do you have any stories to share, you know, as an example?
Yeah, so
that you can share.
Growing up, I was a cheerleader. And one of the things that I learned from a young age was creative, what is it called? Constructive criticism. And so anytime I receive negative feedback, I try to look at what I can learn from this. And it's not always negative feedback. A lot of times it is me not explaining to my client what I'm doing. And so sometimes I'm just running ads and I'm not explaining what I'm doing, or and the ads are just going, or you know, I might be putting things in a brand strategy and I didn't explain one piece of it and they thought it could be used for this and it can't. So now I'm having to explain, you know, that was never maybe the intention behind it or something like that. And so I never really perceive it as negative. I always perceive it as a learning point, because I myself am a young business owner, not even from the sense of age, but my business itself is young. Like my business is in the state that it is now is only about 7 months old. So I'm still learning. I'm still pivoting. And so any feedback, positive or negative, I always try to see what I can learn from this. And so if it's positive, I'm like, okay, how can I make this even grander and even bigger to get more of these? Or if it's negative, which I've been very lucky not to receive. I would like to say that I have not received that yet, but I'm, you know, not opposed to it. I always love constructive feedback, and I always ask my clients, what is something that you wish I had done, or what is something that you think I could do? I'm always open to constructive feedback.
Well, yeah, the next question, Rich, I just wanted to state, we had concluded a few days ago watching season two of this reality competition series called Next in Fashion, right, on Amazon Prime, if anybody wants to see it. And the woman who ended up winning that season, right, she got criticism, you know, almost, you know, a critique every, you know, competition for the episode. And she took the criticism, and she would always improve upon everything she did. And she was the only one that actually literally took in the criticism and said, okay, they said this, I got to remember this for the next thing. And this, it made her improve to the point that she won. So I think that goes along with what you're saying. Back to you, Richard.
Absolutely. My last question is, and really want to know, like, what is the most rewarding part of, you know, your company? And I think you touched on this earlier on, but, you know, can you like share, you know, what gets you going every day, right? What helps you, what makes you get out of bed?
Yeah, I think the most rewarding part of it is watching somebody's idea, because each business is ultimately just an idea. Watching that idea come to life and be tangible, that gives me chills every time. Like literally every time I do a brand strategy, and then maybe 2 months later, the website's been updated, the ads have been updated, the Instagram looks completely different. Oh my gosh, I get chills. And that is the part that I feel gets me out of bed in the morning. Like, I love what I do. I truly love what I do. And I think everyone has their little nerdy thing that they like to talk about. And mine is business. I can geek out over business. I will geek out over a business plan. I'll geek out over marketing. I love this stuff. And so to now be in a position where I get to work with the industries I love to work with, I get to work with the people I love to work with, and I get to learn why people are doing the things that they do. Like, so many of these businesses, we don't even know, have these deep backstories. And, you know, I recently worked with a founder of an e-commerce platform that is built by a Black man, and each of the products were founded by Black people. And so he has this campaign that on his social media that, can you name a lotion that was founded by a Black person? Can you name a soap that was founded by a Black person? Can you name a toothbrush that was founded by a Black person? And even myself, I was like, actually, no, I can't do that. And even deeper than that, learning his story as a founder, and I, you know, I won't, you know, disclose his story, but his story was so impactful. And, you know, it included homelessness and how he got out of that to now being a business owner of a company that is on its way to thriving, and he has investors and he has buy-ins and he already is making sales. And it is just this amazing story. And I have cried on these calls with my clients before, you know, and that's part of me being authentic. I am not afraid to cry in front of my clients if I'm emotional. You know, it's, they have these beautiful stories and they're creating beautiful businesses from it. And I feel so blessed, so lucky, that they trust me with this business to get it to an amazing point and to help it grow. I always say that to my clients. Thank you so much for trusting me with your business. It means so much to me.
I feel that.
I like things people can do. Me too. I like things that people can geek out on, right? I like that, you know, sometimes I tell people, like, and you'll agree with this, math may be boring to people until it's applied to something that you really like. Then it gets interesting, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, school, algebra, not good at it. Calculus, not good at it. Statistics, oh my goodness, good at it.
Oh, I was terrible at math.
That's great. I was good at it all, like even econometrics, which people hate, right? But when applied to stuff, when applied to stuff you really like, right? You know, all of that stuff you're learning in school, you know, it starts to really set in for people to know, particularly in the business world, when you're doing things, you know, in the business world. So I guess here is a question that ultimately you're going to be asked. Where do you see yourself in 5 years with your business?
Yeah, in 5 years with my business, I would love to strengthen the business coaching side of it. I do have quite a bit of business coaching clients now, but I would love to continue to grow my own knowledge in business coaching. And I would love to have scaled my business coaching. So maybe shifting from one-on-one coaching to maybe group coaching, to doing in-person coaching events, to have being a speaker, you know, about these things. And then also, of course, having the agency side of things. So not only am I helping you and advising you on these things, but we can help you implement it. And so having a full-fledged marketing agency would also be very beautiful. And then, you know, maybe at that point, we'll think about having like some kind of incubator situation. But I think right now, the biggest goal that I have for right now is scaling the business coaching and the agency side of my businesses.
Yeah. And is there like, you know, now you can just let your mind wander as far as you want to, right? You can be unrealistic at this moment. And if you had a dream client, who would that dream client be?
Oh, if I had a dream client. Oh, this is a hard one. This is a hard one. You know, I can't even tell you. I think I just kind of get, I don't have any name in mind. I don't have any industry in mind. But I think what the success story or the case study of a dream client would be, would probably be a person that is working 9 to 5 right now. They have a side hustle idea and they just need someone to serve as like their partner in business to help them get this idea off the ground. And so we're working on your business plan. We're maybe getting investors and grants and getting you the funding that you need to work on this, and then growing that idea from something that is just in your mind to something that is truly tangible. And then, you know, you have a website, you're getting pre-sales, and then from there you're making money on this idea. And it doesn't have to be a significant amount of money, but making money on this idea to the point that it is paying for itself, and then growing that to a point that it then replaces your full-time job. And from there, you're hiring employees, you're scaling, you're really getting this to a point that not only is it providing for you and your family, but also for the lives of others, your employees.
And who is your, you know, who is your role model in the business world? Who is that individual that's just someone that you look up to, whether you know him or whether you do not know?
Yeah, so I would honestly have to say my mom. She was a badass. I don't know if I can cuss, but total badass. And so she had her business that she started when my dad was deployed. He was in the military, that he was deployed, and she just had my brother, just gave birth to my brother, and or was about to give birth. I was very young when I saw all of this happening, so I'm not 100% sure of the timeline, but it was definitely within the same year, but I'm not sure what it was down to the month. And she was an educator, so she was working full-time as a teacher. At this point, she was working at she was teaching teachers how to be teachers. So she was working with the school district, educating teachers on how to become the best teachers. And so she was working full-time and was starting a business. And so she looked around and realized that none of the daycares in the area were good enough for her son as somebody who was an educator themselves. So she started her own preschool, and grew that preschool, and within a few years had to move buildings because it just became this amazing business, and it did replace her full-time job. And it was a business that when my dad retired, it was able to provide for our family. And it just like totally brought my family to like this place of being generational wealth. And so it's generational wealth in the sense of I have the knowledge, the business knowledge now, and I've been able to watch her start from a little seed to a full oak tree, like this beautiful oak tree, and watch that business grow from my childhood. And even me, I was very hands-on with the business. So I was watching things. I was, you know, helping, you know, every child that has a parent that is an entrepreneur, you know, you're not legally supposed to be working in the business, but you're doing something to help, of course. And so whether that's, you know, helping sleep after all the kids are gone or something like that, when I was a child, you know, about 10 years old to at 16 years old, working at the front desk, greeting people, you know, that was like my first sales job, giving tours of the facility. And so when I think of the timeline and the growth that I want for my clients and the growth that I want for myself, I always think of my mom and how she grew her business nearly single-handedly, to something so beautiful and ultimately something we were able to exit. We were able to sell the business and, you know, and it was just like the beautiful, a little close to the book.
Great. So what is the most impactful book that you've read that you think has really aided you in your career?
Yeah. So I like to read a lot. So I have a lot of recommendations actually, but an author that I go back to a lot is Donald Miller. He has a lot of great books. But if I had to tell a new business owner which book to start with, it would have to be Building a Story Brand, because it's actually a marketing book. So it's a marketing book. And I say that because you can have a beautiful product, you can have a beautiful service, beautiful website, but if you ultimately cannot sell, you're not going to make money. So if you don't know how to market well, you're not going to make money. So Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller, every single page has things you can do right now in your business to make it amazing and to get sales. And I would highly recommend it to any entrepreneur just starting out.
Yeah. And the last question I have for you is, what is the theme song to your life? What is that musical track that just gets you going and gets you pumped for work?
Oh, goodness.
Glorilla. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I don't even know. Oh, goodness. I don't think I have a song. You know, I'm the worst at picking a top one anything. You know, maybe if I have like top 10, it'd be a different situation. But I'm the worst at picking a top one anything. David, I don't know about that one.
Mm-hmm. That's we can save it for episode two. Yeah, the second episode when we have you on. You know, I think this conversation alone really sparked a lot of entrepreneurs, if whoever's listening, with all the, you know, X amount of listenerships that we have for every episode. But seriously, like, you know, you even got me thinking, like, how can I scale up if I want to, like, choose this route? So, and it's very clear that you are intentional and, you know, you will always keep striving in your business line because, you know, you have integrity. And that's what's missing in a lot of these other businesses, right? But, you know, and that will be the concluding point of this episode. And what we normally do here, do you have any closing remarks? So, you know, or by the way, do you have any questions for us? I feel like we've just been grilling you with questions. But do you have any questions for us or, you know, or any closing remarks?
Yeah, I think my question for you guys would also be like, what is the most rewarding part of being on this podcast?
I think the most rewarding part is getting together each week with two guys named Richard, right? You know, and really being able to express ourselves and talk about what's happening in the world and what's happening in our lives and, you know, really being able to share alike. I think that's one of the greatest things that I really enjoy about being on this podcast. It's really the caring and the sharing.
Yeah, look at you, Busta Rhymes. I really enjoy conducting an episode every week because, you know, in more ways than not, this is like my form of like therapy, right? Where we come together and we like discuss like, you know, current affairs and also just any ideas that come to mind. And, you know, it is very rewarding, you know, to have people who listen that kind of look like, so that looks like us or that have similar ideals as us. And, you know, we're trying to create that, you know, I'm not
trying to say we were trying to make like an exclusive space, but like you mentioned, right? Like this podcast is not for everybody, you know. This is like more so like actual informative discussions. So yeah, I think anybody that we can reach out to, whether it's one person or 1,000 people, you know, that's rewarding my end.
I love that. One thing I do want to add, and you kind of mentioned it at the beginning, and that was, what advice would I give to young entrepreneurs or anyone wanting to start a business? You don't have to be young. The advice that I always give to my clients is don't be afraid to be seen trying. And we talked about buying followers. If you're starting an Instagram for your business, if you're starting a YouTube channel, you're starting a TikTok, a X profile, whatever it is, even if you only have 2 followers at the time, I don't want you to buy followers. I want you to build that organically. And I don't want you to be afraid to be seen trying. So don't be afraid to promote yourself. And a lot of times when we think of entrepreneurship, we think of the sexy entrepreneur and they can just travel and they can buy whatever they want and they don't have a schedule. That's the biggest thing we hear. Oh, you're so lucky, Caitlin, you don't have a schedule. That's true, but my schedule also looks like me. It's currently 8 p.m. right now, and I'm technically still working. So, you know, no, you don't have a schedule. And, you know, the nitty gritty and the startup does, it's not sexy, but one day you will have a beautiful business that you are so proud of that is thriving. And I want you to keep pushing, even when it doesn't look like it's going well. I want you to keep pushing and keep going, because one day you're going to have an amazing story to tell about how hard you had to work for your business, or all of the work that you had to do to get to the point that you are. And it's going to create lessons upon lessons that you're going to be grateful for. So in the beginning, the biggest thing I can tell you is don't be afraid to be seen trying. Don't be afraid to add your business to your LinkedIn experience. That is always something that people do not do. I think you should add it there and just be proud of what you're working on. Be proud of what you're working on.
Love it. David?
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, I think this has been great. And just to add on to what you said, right? You know, if people are purchasing followers and audiences, and I guess you can say they are not like us, right? So that being said, that concludes.
You see, I got you to love that song now. I just want to say that.
That concludes that podcast for this week. It's been great having Caitlin here. And until next week, bye, everybody.
Bye.